Hey everyone, I'm gonna do my best to give this guest a proper introduction. She's had a lot of success, so hopefully I cover all of it, or at the very least, most of it. Today we have Coach Crystal Rosenthal from Concordia University in Irvine. And get this, she coaches softball, my first softball coach on Coaching Mud, and a pretty darn good one at that. Coach Crystal bleeds yellow and green. Those are Concordia's school colors, by the way. She's been the head coach at Concordia since 2009, where she took over a good program, and right off the bat, built a great program. Back when Concordia was an NAIA Division I program, she won 4 consecutive GSAC Conference regular season championships, 1 NAIA National Championship, and an opening round championship, was voted NAIA Coach of the Year, and also won 4 GSAC Coach of the Year honors. She was inducted into the Concordia Athletics Hall of Fame in 2008 for her performance as a softball player at the university. She was also named the athletic director in June this year. In this episode, she shares what she learned in her early years at the helm, the keys to building a great program, the importance of being your true, authentic self, and so much more. I don't care what sport you coach, this is a great episode for anybody. Let's roll it back and see how it went. So, Coach Crystal, I know obviously you were a softball player. I'm going to talk a lot about that throughout this interview, but I want to know, just because you were a player doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to end up being a coach. But for you, that's the path that you were led down. So tell me, what got you into coaching?
Yeah, good question. You know, I played a lot of sports growing up. My family's big into sports. I have an older brother that played football and baseball and pretty much everything. And my dad coached for 40 years, youth level, high school level, a little junior college, baseball and basketball. And actually, basketball was my first sport, and I played club in that. I did not start softball until I was a freshman in high school, other than a little bit of Bobby Sox when I was really young. And I think I wasn't the most skilled player always, but I think I had a good understanding of whatever game it was that I was playing. So I would say I always had like an understanding of how teams work and spacing in sports and kind of, you know, maybe a little bit more mature thoughts about who should be playing. Wasn't always myself. So I think just the atmosphere I grew up in led me to some interest in coaching. And then I had a really influential high school coach. She coached me both in basketball and softball. And I went to Valley Christian High School in Cerritos, and she kind of taught me through basketball, especially about what it like looks like to run a program versus to coach a team. And I think that was like my first spark of interest in creating like a culture. So then fast forward, I go through college and I actually thought I was going to become a lawyer. That was kind of the path that I was on. And I was offered I guess it was a paid assistant coach at Concordia right when I graduated. The pay was awesome, as you can imagine. So I started doing that and then kind of fell in love. I started coaching club softball, and that's really probably where I got my feet wet in terms of, you know, the dynamics that come with coaching kids that have parents that are a lot very active in their child's career. And that's kind of how it started. It was definitely not my intention to coach, but I think clearly it was the path I was probably intended to go on.
Awesome. I love that. I love how you also mentioned that your high school coach taught you, you know, not just how to coach a team, but how to build a program. And we're going to talk a lot about that because you've done a great job with the softball program at Concordia. So from a young age, it sounds like you kind of learned how to build a program.
Yeah, you know, it's tricky because I think when you're building a program instead of a team, there's a lot more discipline that probably goes along with that, because kind of coaching a team, you can be more accommodating, I guess, in some ways. But when you're working on a program, there are things in my mind bigger that are no bigger than the program. There is nothing bigger than the program, including the head coach. And so I think learning that, like I said, and seeing the investment at that early age in high school from someone, and she was really successful. So of course that sparked my interest. And sometimes that meant not to my benefit. When I was playing high school basketball for her, you know, why am I not playing more? And then it was kind of like, well, because your ego is too big. And it's too big for this program. And then I kind of had to dial it back and understand what she was saying, but it really did stick with me.
Great. Okay, so this isn't the case for you. I just want to preface this question with that. But why do you think it is that
great players. So you're a great player, or you were a great player. They don't always pan out to be great coaches. You did, but for most cases, that's not what happens. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I think it's probably different for everybody, but you think my first person I think of, because I love the Lakers so much, is Magic Johnson. Probably one of my top five Lakers of all times, obviously. I think sometimes when you're a great player, some of that comes with this amazing natural gifts. And when you have natural gifts, you don't have to necessarily get coached up so much on the fundamentals. Also, you don't have perspective sometimes of the other side of your team in terms of what does it feel like to not play and how does it feel to not be the center of attention. So I think sometimes what you see is that people that have been great players don't have a good pulse. Because to me, if you want to win at a high level as a coach, you have to affect at least 80% of your players, at least. And I think when you don't have a full pulse of what that might look like from all angles, and I will say I had a great career as a player, but I was not a great player. And I think what made my career great was I really did understand early on, I'm not as good as most of the people around me. So I need to figure out how to maximize what I'm really good at. And I'm going to really lobby myself in that arena. Great players just, and I tell this to my team all the time, I'm really sorry to the kids that don't have to work that have to work harder than some other kids, but that's just the way athletics is. Some of our players don't have to work as hard, not in practice per se, but more in the pre and post training part of it, because they just have gifts that are different. And I think that's probably why sometimes great players don't make great coaches.
Okay. Yeah, no, I can definitely agree with that. They don't necessarily have to get through those tough times. And because like you said, they have those natural gifts that the kid who really has to learn a lot, riding the bench and work and push to become possibly sixth man or a starter, they have to go through that. Whereas these gifted players, a lot of the times, don't really have to. So yeah, I could see that. It makes you definitely more of a relational and relatable coach, having gone through all of that or figuring out how to navigate it. All right, so Concordia softball was good before you became the head coach. They were good. They were above 500. But I want to know, you took a good program and you made it a great program. So your earlier years at the helm of Concordia softball, what was your approach to taking over that program?
Well, I had three coaches in 4 years when I was here. So my first hope was, I am like loyal as a dog, honestly. And so for me, taking over this program, first of all, was like the greatest opportunity of my life. I was extremely grateful for the chance to do this. But my approach always was, I wanted to give some stability to a program that didn't have very much of it in terms of coaching staffs. And then I wanted to do some things again that I didn't have a chance to experience as a student athlete in college that I would have liked to have. And if you probably ask those early teams, my approach was probably a little crazy. I was really, really hard on my first couple teams. And I think part of that is why there has been some long sustaining success at Concordia softball. I think I was probably right in some of those places to be extra hard nose and extra, we worked really, really hard. And they have some great stories. I have great relationships with those kids still, but they tell some pretty great stories. And, you know, most of them are true to be about how we practiced, how much we practiced, how hard practice was. So I think probably my approach was, I really, really was interested in creating, again, this program idea that when I leave or whenever I leave, it will have been better then I found it for the next person. That was really my approach taking the job.
Wow. Well, it's pretty darn good. So you've definitely already made it better than it was when you first got there. And I mean, I was literally going over the seasons from 2009 before and now after, and it's like every year the percentage just goes up and up, and it's like, wow, you don't see that very often in sports. For with successful coaches, even, you know, they have great years and then they kind of go down another great year, but yours is like bang, bang, bang. It's pretty awesome. So that's cool.
Yeah. A lot of great players. Right. And I have to give a lot of credit. I have an amazing associate head coach, Rosie Brianna. She is a lot of the magic of the recruiting, and you can't win without great kids. But to be honest, the great part of the athletes that have played here is their willingness to put it on the line. And that's the hardest part, right? And I keep feeling like I'm going to run into one of those years when it's, you know, not possible, but just this amazing, it's just not a one-man show to keep this investment. We have a great alumni that are very interested in the sustainability of success for us. And just, again, I can't give Rose enough credit. She's an amazing evaluator of talent. So we end up getting some athletes that people maybe didn't have on their radar, that she sees and figures out that we could develop this kid. And some of those kids have become our greatest players that have led to these years of so much success for us. So kudos to her, because without her, we wouldn't be where we are.
That's great. So what mistakes did you make in your earlier years at Concordia? I know that you mentioned that you were really, really tough on your team. And it doesn't sound like that's a mistake because it paid off. But what else do you have for us? What mistakes were there? I mean, again, as soon as you took over the program, you guys were winning. So if maybe there wasn't very many mistakes, but what do you have for us?
There was a lot of mistakes. I think I was obviously, well, I would hope I'm more mature now. I was immature in some of my decision-making. I worried a lot about what people thought, people's parents, my own players, in terms of playing time. You know, I made some decisions probably based off of emotion versus based off of just, it's not personal, these are just facts. I think the biggest mistakes that you make are just really losing sight sometimes of the importance of the game versus the importance of the person. I do think my strength is probably the relational side, so that's not a concern. But when I was younger, I love to succeed and I love to compete. And sometimes early on, I could have lost sight of these are your people, right? And your people are always your people, regardless of the outcome, at least they should be. So I think early on in my immaturity, letting emotions factor in and then learning over time, this too shall pass, right? And that's kind of with everything. I don't care if you're coaching males or females. I know girls get the rap for being more emotional. I think those emotions just come out a little differently. I think guys show it a little bit more with anger. Girls show it a little bit more with however you want to call it, emotion, I guess. But just learning that the biggest thing is you're dealing with people and you can't lose sight of that. And when I first started, I have a really quick story. I don't believe in starting my seniors on senior day unless I believe that those seniors can help me win that particular game. Not that they couldn't, but I'm going to start my best nine and I don't alter my lineup on senior day. And I took it pretty good from a parent on that day. And I let that alter me and then really start to doubt what I was doing. So as I have gotten older, I have learned your emotions are they're not very reliable. They're just not. And you have to just handle getting through when you don't feel very good about something that you did, even though you know it's right. I'm assuming the Tampa Bay Ray manager is probably feeling these things this morning because he's just getting it about taking a starter out last night in the Dodger game. But I can imagine in his mind at the time, he was not trying to lose that game. And it's hard sometimes to lose sight of, you have to do what you think you have to do at that time with the best information you have. So I think early on, my mistakes are probably age appropriate, but the professionalism in me has grown, the maturity in me has grown. And I think my ability to make better decisions easier, I guess, than I did when I was younger.
Wow. Okay, so your story brings a question to my mind. So if you're about to play on senior day, a team that maybe is last in your conference or something like that, do you then alter your lineup or do you still keep it pretty consistent?
No, I think I don't ever alter my lineup ever unless I'm trying. I always tell my team, I'm going to put us in the best chance to win the game. I never have an asterisk on win the game against a team that's good, against a team that's not very good. Because I know as a player, I never wanted to play unless you thought I should be playing truly to win the game. I don't believe that hard work earns you playing time. And I know that's going to sound really odd. I think hard work helps you contribute to a winning culture. I think playing time, you're responsible for being ready for an opportunity for playing time. But I never tell my kids, you know, if you work hard, you're going to play. I expect everybody to work hard. So to me, that's the universal thing in the room is, again, working hard is subjective, and understanding your players and kind of how they approach their work is different. But no, I really don't. And that doesn't make me popular sometimes on senior day. And I get that. But I think my players understand it. And I think they understand the expectation. And to be honest, I think they probably agree with it most of the time.
Yeah, no, I can imagine. Well, first of all, it sounds like it's something that you consistently do. So you're consistent, and it's never something that I've really even heard of. And when I hear your perspective on it, it really is like, wow, that makes sense. And it makes sense to who you are as a coach as well, that that's something that you would do. And I don't doubt for a second that your team doesn't buy in or agree with it, because I would imagine you're recruiting players who fit your culture and fit your style. So that's really don't interesting. Get me wrong.
I mean, my seniors are the first people off the bench that day when they can be. Right. And of course I want them to have their closing moment on our field on their senior day. Of course I want that. I'm human, obviously, but right. I guess I've never equated my value in someone is not equated by playing time. To be quite honest, some of my favorite players of all times didn't play very much. So I don't associate those two things for me. Playing time is not personal at all.
Right.
You know, and I think that's something that it takes a minute to get used to when you're playing here. You have to really, like what you said, you have to buy into that. And if you can't, it's a long road to haul over here at Concordia Softball.
Okay. So I'm curious to know, since being hired in 2009 to now going into 2021, what has changed for you as far as your coaching philosophy or your style of coaching, if anything?
Good question. I think a lot, probably. I laugh because I got my master's degree here at Concordia in the master's of coaching, and I did a portfolio. And when I pick up that portfolio now, it kind of makes me uneasy, because all those things as a younger coach that you thought for sure that you were going to, this is how we're going to do it. Right. And it's like, well, that's probably not what we're doing anymore. what I've learned that's changed over time is that there's no two teams that are the same. So you have to make some adjustments, which means you have to be present with your current team. And you have to be very aware of what's going on. I'm like a detective, not in trying to uncover their personal life, but I'm very observant coach. I hear most things. I'm pretty sensitive to knowing when someone's kind of not themselves. I understand ebb and flow of, I can push you, and probably today's not a great day to push you, so today let's take it easy a little bit. So I think the things that have changed in my philosophy the universal things for me that, like, you know, work hard, put the team before yourself, respect your teammates. Those things have stayed the same. But I think what I've learned about winning at a high level is the number one variable to me in that is what happens when things go bad, and working on the response in those areas. And I think ultimately that's kind of matches my philosophy about helping student athletes in their lives, because that's really what this is preparing us for, right? It's not winning a softball game. As fun as it is, it's not very lasting, and it's really not that important in the scope of things. But teaching people how to respond as a group together when things don't go well, and teaching people and myself, like, who you are really shines through in your response to failure, in your response to adversity. And I think that is something that we have pinpointed as, how can we pull that out every day in a practice? How can we put you in those situations? And then how can I love you up when those things happen? And it is hard. And how can they love me up when they know some things are hard for me? You know, like, they know my red lights. They know when I've shared with them, like, if you look at me and I'm doing this, I need you to tell me, like, hey, like, knock it off. I'm in my red light, right? And I can't get out of it. So I think being vulnerable is something that's changed for me. I have this tough appearance to people. And I think the people that really know me, I'm actually not a very serious person outside of the field. I think I get maybe a bad rap on the field, as I'm not very friendly, and that's okay. But I think the concept of being vulnerable and letting my team understand, like, I'm just on this journey with them. I'm not in charge of the journey. Yeah, I'm the authority figure. Okay. But to me, it's more like, we're on it together. And if you're going to be great, I've got to be great. And if I'm going to be great, you have to be able to identify me as your head coach, like, coach, we need this from you. Or this is hard when you do this. And I have to be able to hear that from them and understand, like, this is not helping the situation, if that makes sense. So I've definitely changed over time. and become a lot less stubborn and a lot less interested in being right all the time.
I love that. That's awesome. Something you mentioned that kind of triggered me was, you know, this idea that it's not just about softball, right? It's bigger picture. It's life. And that's what we're teaching. I'm not just teaching my players how to play basketball. I'm teaching them, you know, life. And it sounds cliche to say, because we all say it, but it's so true. I mean, if you meet someone who hasn't really been involved in sports, or there's a reason, we'll say this, there's a reason why people want to hire someone who was a former athlete, because they know how to be on time. They know how to respect their boss's time, their coworkers' time. They know how to work with people. They know how to read people. They become observers. The day-to-day things that they have to get through in practice translates to getting through those day-to-day in the work life. Like they have to really grow mentally and physically, of course. And I think that's really what we're teaching them when we're coaching them up in our sports, is how to do that when they're in their careers or whatever it is they're doing that they don't really get just by being a student. You don't really get that. You get your education, but you don't get how to, you know, get through the tough of coaches on me today, and or my teammates really sucking it up today and I got to get on them and bring them under my arm. You just don't get that really anywhere but sports. So I think it really is just like you said, you know, it's so much more than just our sport. It's about life and translating that into our career field.
Yeah. And to be honest, like the proudest moments for me as a coach is when my alumni come back, and we've got some really successful alumni out in the world. And they'll tell me like, do you know, to this day, like drives me crazy that my, you know, we've got a lot of alumni nurses from our program, and they'll say like, people are just so weak. You know, why can't people show up to work? Why can't people be on time? Why can't people be accountable? And I'm like, that makes me proud. And they'll tell me all the time, like, thank you, because I know exactly where this feeling comes from. And I think that is something, again, I didn't invent that. Someone taught me that, right? And my parents did a great job teaching me accountability and understanding nobody's responsible for your situation other than yourself. And I think if you don't learn anything else here, part of winning truly, and what you learn from winning, it's not the winning. It's winning is extremely hard. And you know, I like a quote by Nick Saban, like winning takes what it takes. You know, it takes a lot, and it takes what it takes, and there is no way around it. And so I think when you learn those habits, that's how you win. And those things will stay with you forever because they become just ingrained. And I think that's the part that makes me the proudest of kind of what we've done. In terms of the success, it's really rooted in my kids. And maybe it's frustrating for me as they're going through here, because I'm like, why don't you not get this? Like, what is going on? But they get it eventually.
Yay! Okay, so we've touched, I believe, a lot on some keys to having a great program in our conversation thus far. But what have we not hit on? Tell me, what are the keys for you, or for really anyone who wants to have, or who does have, a great program? What does it take?
Well, I think there's just like that it factor, you know, and I don't know how to manage that. And I think it can come out in a lot of different ways, but honestly, a winning or a positive culture, it takes a consistent leader for sure, and consistent in who you are. I guess I should have said in my earlier answer, you know, as a younger head coach, especially, and more maybe as an associate head coach, because that's where I started. You know, you go to conventions and in your world of basketball, you'll hear about great drills and there's this great new defense or there's this amazing offense. And then you hear this amazing coach and they sound great. And why can't I sound like that? So I'm going to read up on this person and I'm going to listen to this person. And then I'm going to start sounding like this person. And I think I got caught up in that. Just wasn't who I was, whoever I was trying to emulate. And those people can contribute and you can learn, certainly. But I think understanding who are you as a coach, what do you really, really believe in? And are you being authentic with that? So I remember a really pivotal year for me early on in my head coaching career. I think it was like year two and three. And we were scratching around the surface that we might be pretty good and we're probably on a good path. I stopped worrying about what everybody else was doing so much. Because when you recruit in college, you kind of get caught in that mess too, you know, like, well, what are they doing and how are they getting these kids and why aren't we? I stopped thinking of it like that and I started worrying about what I was doing and doing things that were comfortable for me as a head coach, because I am not a black and white kind of coach. There are no, I am a kind of a gray area. And when I say that, like, I don't coach everyone the same. I don't have a ton of rules. I don't have a lot of universal truths about your swing or about how your mechanics are going to look on a specific ground ball. I think they're universal things that are absolute, but I think having a successful program is about being true to who you are as a head coach and then letting that permeate to your program. Because like you said, the word consistency, kids can sniff out from a mile away a fake anything. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be all over that. And so when you're not true to who you are, you're not going to find a lot of people to get down for that. But when you are, you might not have everybody match you up, like match up with you, but if you recruit well, or if you pick a team well, if you're in high school, or you manage your team well, you certainly can have those athletes permeate whatever that message is that's important to you. It will resonate. You know, I would say my team is, at practice at least, a little mouthy, and they're grindy, and they're competitive, and they don't shy away from hard work. They're very honest and blunt, and I know for sure that's an environment that I've created. And I tell them all the time, it's like monsters. I create monsters sometimes that is like harder for me to manage, but it is truer to an environment I'm comfortable with. And so I think whatever that is for someone, my encouragement is be yourself, because that is your best way. That is, there's only one you, right? So be yourself, learn from people around you, but don't let that learning overtake who you are as a coach.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. I mean, I feel like I still more so earlier, but I still kind of struggle with this. You know, I'll see something great that Gino Auriemma does or Kelly Graves. And I'm like, I have to remind myself, wait a second. I can't do that. I don't have what UConn has. I can't do that with my team or whatever it is, from a drill to how he talks to his players, whatever the case may be. I'm like, I can't, I'm not him. I'm never going to be him. I have to do what I know is best and be my true authentic self. So absolutely. I think that's huge.
That's a hard one too. It's hard because when you hear, like, again, listen, I listen to Gino. Of course I want to tap into how the world, I went to a game, UConn versus UCLA with my high school basketball coach, actually, whenever they were here last, because I just wanted to be in the room and see, you know. And there's a clear cut difference that there's something there, right? And he's got it. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, he's got it, whatever it is for him. Mm-hmm. So I try to remind myself, if you spend 5 minutes with Sue Inquist, the legendary UCLA softball coach, you want to be everything that she is, but then you realize, like, there is only one Sue Inquist, so I can't do that. I can help. She has helped me tremendously become more of who I already am. You know, Colin Cowherd, the sports broadcaster, always says that people just become more of who they already are. And that's really the truth for a coach. And you have to really know who that is, because if you don't know who that is, then your kids won't either.
Yeah. Wow. And, you know, believe it or not, I know who Sue Enquist is. I when I was in the interview process with OCC, I talked about her in my interview, because I watched her speech about being in that top third, and she emphasizes the top third of your life and the middle third and the bottom third and what that looks like. And that really resonated with me. So I'm a big fan of Sue Enquist. She's still involved at UCLA, right? Just not the head coach.
Yeah, she does some teaching, and she's very involved in the softball world still. She's a stud, man. So if anybody out there in the basketball world wants a little side pick me up about how to be not in the bottom third, she's amazing. She's amazing. And she honestly is. So she's like the Gino in softball for us coaches. And I think the crazy part about her is her accessibility to coaches. She's been a mentor for me. She, you know, if I call her, she'll pick up that phone. And that was when I was an assistant to now. She is just one of those people that is like, she's got it going on.
Oh, that's great. Okay. So you touched a little bit about recruiting your players, and I'm curious to know, when you're looking for players, and you and your associate head coach or whoever else, your staff will say, how do you find these players that you know are going to fit your team? What are you looking for?
Well, I think there's the first parts, which are God-given gifts. And then God-given gifts in ways that you think maybe can develop, because there's some telltale signs of someone's makeup in terms of how good are their fast twitch muscles. Are they going to get stronger? Those kinds of things. Those are the easiest parts of the job. I'm a slow recruiter because I spend a lot of time doing my homework on a kid. yes, watching them in terms of how they are with their teammates, but really talking to people that know this person. And then talking a lot with the kid, because I'm looking for something very specific here. Again, we talked about, it is not easy to play for me. It's fun a lot of days, and I think you'll feel it will be worth it, but I think you have to be okay with, you will never be bigger than the program is. You will always be expected to carry yourself in a certain way, and the minimum expectation of you physically is going to be hard. And I'm relentless. I don't miss a beat. So I expect that from you every day. I expect the best you have to offer that particular day, every day. It might not be a great day for you. I just want your best that you have to offer that day. And so I tell recruits a lot, like in the process, which maybe cost me some recruits, but it's okay. The very truth of, you have to really want to win in mind, body, and soul. You have to really want that. And that means in the middle of March, you're sitting on my bench. Tell me about what you look like inside of my dugout. And really assess that for yourself. Because if the answer is you are visibly upset, you are a poor teammate, you can't manage that, then this is not a good place for you. And even if they're a superstar, to be honest. So I think the talent piece is the easiest piece. And will I give sometimes on talent? Like, yeah, I'm human. Of course I will. I'd be foolish to tell you that I'm not going to overlook some things for talent. But I also have a max capacity on a team for how many of those I will handle in a year. Because I will not let anyone overrun the culture of the team. And I think if I have somebody that maybe doesn't fit 100%, but I'm in a year where I have really, really strong culture, those kids can overwhelm that person and we can get them on board. Mm-hmm. So I think the piece of, it's a hard world right now. And all coaches out there that are listening to this will know the same answer. I don't care what sport you're coaching. Parents are a lot more involved. And I think to the detriment of their child sometimes, in terms of, let your kid fail a little bit, let them sit on the bench a little bit, let them cry, let them be homesick, and they'll be okay. And trust me, at least in my program, I'm going to know the difference between a little bit of weakness and we've got a serious problem on our hands. And I think this whole process of parents protecting their child to a fault, and I'm so grateful to my parents for that, because they probably threw me to the fire to the fault. They said, you know, if you want a conversation with your coach about playing time, you have that conversation. And if you sign up on this team, you are staying on this team. And you might not play ever, but you're finishing on this team. And I think there's just not enough of that anymore. And I know that sounds cliche and everybody's saying it, but honestly, at the higher level, it's true. Because following through and finishing something is hard. And it's meant to be hard. And it's okay that it's hard. And you'll survive hard. We could do hard things. And I think I think that is something I wish was taught a little bit more at the younger level, so that as we're recruiting, we can kind of sift through that, you know, a little bit more. So I think it's coaching at the lower levels. It's coach's responsibility. And I know it's hard because I coach travel. So I know it's hard sometimes to deal with parents, but again, coaches, we can also do hard things and we can put our foot down and we can encourage and we can not accept things that are not okay in our teams. Even at the fault of losing, because you let somebody good go. No player is worth that. Giving up the culture of your team. It's just not. And that's a hard lesson to learn when you're a young coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I definitely agree, you know, and I've mentioned this before a couple of times on this episode, on other Zooms and things like that. But something that I really did have to learn is that I cannot let my morals and my values of myself or my program waver. And that is why when you look back on my season, I went from, you know, 11 players at one point to finishing with 7 and having to cancel some games because we had some injuries and things like that. But I would rather play with 7 and have to cancel for an injury than ask one of those kids that fell off because of, you know, they weren't in line with our program to come and play with us, because it would not have, there goes my integrity as a coach. There goes my credibility. So I definitely 100% agree with you there that we cannot let one player, unless, like you said, you have a great culture already that they can kind of get sucked into. We can't let that deter us from what we're trying to do with our program.
No, and good for you, because once you do that once, you'll remember that as a coach the rest of your career, and it will help you make every decision moving forward. Because that's what I always say. I'd rather lose my way than win the bad way. I'd rather lose it knowing we're doing what we're supposed to be doing versus win it, doing it wrong. I'm not doing that. So good for you, because that does stick with you.
So how's the adjustment period? You get an athlete who maybe comes from a good program, a great program. I don't know. I would doubt you're getting kids from bad programs, but maybe there's a great kid on a bad team, whatever the case may be. What's that adjustment from their high school team to now coming and playing for you in this dominant program when you know, you said you're not so easy to play for?
I think the hardest adjustments are the strength and the pace of practice. I think a lot of our kids come from really strong club programs with great coaches, but I think the difference is you're surrounded. First of all, I talk very fast out of practice, especially, and I don't, this is a definite fault of mine. I don't care that much that you don't know what I'm saying. I know someone on the field does, my older players mostly, cause they kind of get used to me. So eventually a drill gets set up. But I think the speed, what I hear from my freshmen, is just the speed of practice, the pace of the kids around you, the competitiveness of the kids around you. And then I think the strength of the weight room is a tough adjustment for our young kids to make. And even the kids, I think when I'm watching, I'm like, man, they're transitioning pretty well. They look pretty good. They're the kids that like 6 months later are like, I have no idea what's going on still, coach. And I feel like practice is a whirlwind and everyone around me is so much faster and so much stronger and so much better. And I'm like, really? Cause I thought you'd been like one of our best four players in the fall so far. So I think that's the hardest transition. And then I think just the normal emotions. So here, you know, you, even if you're an hour away from home, the homesick portion, you get sick for the first time on your own, the managing of your laundry, the managing of your social life, the managing of the school is hard. So getting used to the academic portion of that. And then on top of that, and you know, this as a former athlete, then you're sore from lifting. And then you're tired and you're worn down and you're like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, this is miserable. I can't do this anymore. So I always tell my freshmen, if you don't have that cross your mind once between October and November, you're not working hard enough, because it is hard. And when you're not used to it, you can do your summer packet all summer. And when you get back to school, it's a much different story when you're doing it with your other teammates. It's harder.
For sure.
Yeah, it's faster. And you feel like you can't go on some days, and it's emotional. And I think the transition is difficult. And that's when you get the percentage of people that may not make it, or they can't manage it because they can't handle that. But I always tell them, just hold on, get through December and you'll be just fine. And that has happened so many times where they're like, I'm going to go home, coach, I can't do this. And I'm like, you're going to be just fine. You can do it. But I think the speed and the strength is something, especially for girls that are not used to lifting religiously, and lifting a different way in college, because I think girls, some girls don't want to lift because they don't want to get big and bulky. In our program, we like fast and athletic. So we lift maybe lower amounts of weight in a more dynamic way, but that hurts sometimes. So I think that to me is probably the hardest transition. And then getting used to, I'm not usually satisfied in a drill. And I think that wears you down a little bit, but you do get used to what the standard is. And then your older teammates kind of hold you to that standard too. So it's a hard process, and I totally get that. So I'm a little bit, maybe my freshmen would disagree, I'm a little nicer to my freshmen, I think, a little bit more patient in a drill with them, because I get it. And also, I'm only going to hold you to adjusting things that you've been instructed to. I'm not going to hold you to the standard that there's no way I can know, you know, if you've been taught it. So yeah, we spend more time on technique with our freshmen, because I'm going to assume they don't know what I'm asking for until I give them some time to learn it, get through it. And then when you don't show it, that's when we start to have a little pushback of like, okay, why are we not making these adjustments?
Mm-hmm. Where does that come from? Like, your coaching style of everything you just described, really, is that from coaches that you've had? I know we talked about earlier how coaches kind of, they bring out your true self a little bit more, but we also, a lot of how we coach comes from who we've been coached by and how we've been coached. So tell me, where does your style really come from?
Yeah, I think I had a really cool travel softball coach. I think my style of family comes from him. He was, his name was Bill, and he was very, very loyal and very, very interested in our well-being. So I think that part probably comes from him. And I played for him for a long time. I think my parents had a lot to do with my standard, and my expectation is extremely high. And I think that probably comes mostly from my mom, to be honest with you. And she, if she does listen to this, she'll probably laugh and say, this is not true. But like, if I were to hit like a double, she would be like, you know, you could have hit a home run if you just would have finished your swing. Like that was her mindset with me as an athlete. Yeah, they weren't overly impressed, let's say, by my success. And that was okay for me. And they weren't like too hard on me, but it was like very apparent, like you could probably be better. So you probably want to work a little harder. My high school coach, I mentioned, and then I played for my associate head coach for a couple of years in club. She has this really good ability to break down like fundamentals. And I would assume in any sport, because she understands the body well and the anatomy part of, if you want to do this, then this has to do that kind of thing. She watches a lot of films. She breaks down a lot of small techniques. So I've learned a lot from her over the past, geez, we've been doing this together a long time, of what me just wanting a kid to develop their throw or their swing isn't going to happen. I actually have to be able to break it down and teach that. She's really taught me that. She slows us. She'll tell me sometimes, you're drilling, we're doing too many drills, we're not doing enough breakdown, you're doing too much drills, and this is where you can't will this to change. You have to change it physically if you want this, whatever this is. So probably she's been probably the most impactful person in terms of that standard, more than anybody that I've probably been coached by or coached with.
Wow. Awesome. Is she interested in coming and coaching some junior college basketball?
She was actually, so she had like probably 10 offers in D1 basketball and softball. And I'm telling you right now, yes, she probably could break it down for you. Really. And it's amazing because you could be like at a combine with her and be like 200 kids at this combine. And I'm social, so I'm just chatting away, right? Talking to my other friends that coach. And in like 5 minutes, she'll give me a list of 5 kids from the 200. And she'll say, these are the 5 kids that are good. And then I'll talk to the person running the combine. They're like, that's funny because those 5 kids are the only 5 kids committed here to D1 schools. And it's like, and they don't have a uniform on. They just have a t-shirt on and a little number on their shirt. And she immediately can identify like they're good. And that kind of goes in every sport. Her dream of life is to coach football. So I think she's open to any sport, but I'm telling you, she'll blow your mind. If you get her to a practice, she'll blow your mind.
Wow. No, that's amazing. Okay. I'm going to see if I can formulate that. That's somehow to get that to happen. That's film.
Amazing. Even if you get her film, she's really good breaking down film. That's her wheelhouse right there is film.
All right. Awesome. Okay. So this needs to be addressed because, you know, not only are you a great coach, you have a lot on your hands. Now, as of June, you are the athletic director also of Concordia University, which in itself, I got to imagine, is another full-time position, essentially. So why, how did you decide to take on that role? And how has it been so far, especially, you know, with COVID-19?
Great question. How I got here. Good question. I think it definitely wasn't like this is not part of my plan. I was the SWA for the past 5 years here, which is the senior women administrator. So I was kind of involved in administration. And we had a mid-year transition, and then COVID hit. And then the upper administration, our new president, approached me to ask about my interest in the job, and my vice president. And I kind of thought about it a minute, and I definitely wasn't ready to be done coaching. And then when we figured out I could do both, it kind of was just my heart for the university, you know, and I think God works in weird ways, not weird ways. I'm sure they're very great ways, weird ways to me, I guess. And just kind of laid it on my heart that, you know, at the beginning, it was an interim role just to kind of close the gap and figure out where the world we're going to go with this COVID stuff going on. And then as I got into the job, you know, my vice president came back and said, I'd really like to make this permanent. What are your thoughts? And I think, again, it's a total God thing and putting me in the right place at the right time that he wants me in and giving me an opportunity to serve in this role. It's been difficult. It's a lot of work. COVID is, and this is not unique to Concordia or to this role for me. This is everybody in the country. So it's an interesting world of COVID and learning how to deal with the day-to-day surprises that come with that and challenges. But I think the one thing permeating for me isn't just, I don't just love Concordia softball. I love Concordia. So my passion is to help. Again, I go back to make this place better than when I found it. So it's the competitor in me probably that pushes me, but it's also, I have this complete drive for student athlete experience, for graduation, for championships, for having a great culture that coaches want to be a part of. So for now, you know, this is a really cool gig. I'll let you know at the end of the year if I survive the job or not. But I think it's something I can manage, especially if I can get through what just happened over the past 7 months. I feel like A plus, you know, I can do anything.
Oh yeah. That's awesome. Well, I'm excited to see how you do in that role, and excited to see another successful year of softball. I mean, I can't sit here and say that I'm excited to see your program grow, because I feel like it's pretty much grown. You'll just keep being successful. So I'm excited for you to remain successful. We'll put it at that. With that, this whole episode has been advice for aspiring coaches, the entire thing. Anyone can get out of everything that I've asked you, I feel like, some knowledge of, you know, how to be a great coach, how to build a program, this, that, and the other. But is there anything that you would like to maybe re-emphasize, or any new advice that you'd like to share for an aspiring head coach or even assistant coach?
Yeah, I think just remember how important your role is in a young person's life. I think if you are in this for the correct reasons, and for me, correct reasons is you'd like to make an impact in people's lives every day, whether it's small or big. Remember that on those days that get hard. And I go back to part of coaching is I would assume at one point you love to compete, whatever level you competed at. And I think competing to make a difference in people's lives is kind of how I look at it every day. And there are a lot of parts of the job that are very hard for me that I would prefer not to have to do. But those parts that have been hard for me are the things that have made me really get to see who I really am and what I'm made of. And I think constantly assessing yourself is probably the best advice I can give. And knowing, like I said, excuse me, who you are, so that when you reassess, or when you evaluate yourself, or when you let your players evaluate you, is that matching up to what you think you're saying? You know, and I think that is a hard thing sometimes, but sometimes really, for me, I'm pretty good at knowing, like, I did not do my best in a particular year, and I was not as prepared, or I was not as accessible as I should have been. But those are honest conversations I would encourage coaches to have quarterly for yourself. So that would mean you'd have to ask some people about what they think, and the people that matter, your players, your staff, your trainer, your boss. I think sometimes coaches just get so in a groove, or they don't want to know the answer to those things. And I think if you don't know the answer to those things, you have no idea what's happening in your program. So I just think constant assessment, constant evaluation. But the overriding arching theme for me is, if you don't want hard work, don't coach. It's not for the faint of heart. It is a hard job, but I don't feel like I've worked very much I feel like I'm 20. I'm not. I won't tell the world how old I am, but I'm not 20. I don't feel like I've worked very much in my career. I just feel like I've been playing around outside, which I guess is the whole point of it all. This is the first year I felt like I work. Maybe it's this job that I'm in now. But I just say, like, the opportunity to coach and impact young people's lives, what a cool opportunity. And don't take it for granted for one day, because it is the coolest job on the planet.
Yeah, I really couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Coach Crystal, for being on with me. I've really been looking forward to this interview, and I'm really excited to share it with everyone, because, like I said, this isn't basketball. This is just coaching and running a program, building a program, and really life. So I'm just really excited for everyone who listens, who's probably going to be basketball coaches majority, but we'll see. Maybe you can share it and get some softball coaches to listen. But yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me on, you know, and like I said, if you want to talk about X's and O's, about D'ing somebody up, I could do that too. I haven't been that far removed, and I do love those Lakers. So, but I appreciate you having me on, and keep doing big things where you are too as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much.